All right, I'm going to call tonight's meeting to order. Our chair is on her way, should be here before we do much more than take roll call, I hope. So I'll take roll call. Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Hansen?
Present.
Commissioner Herr?
Here.
Okay, and Commissioner Studley will be here shortly. We'll start on public comment. Public comment is each person will have up to 3 minutes to speak. You do not have to identify yourself. But if you do, it would be nice if you could spell your last name because we like having our minutes reflect your names correctly if you choose to identify yourself.
I like to remain anonymous, and I have brought a little stopwatch so I can know when my 3 minutes is up. If any of the other speakers want to borrow my little stopwatch, they're welcome to do so.
And along those lines, so don't run his 3 minutes. I'm told we will finally have a clock here soon so people can gauge themselves a little bit better. That was something that you all had requested, so it's coming.
Oh, well, yeah, we appreciate any time you make accommodations for the public like that. I've been coming several meetings in a row now talking about the concept that you need to realize that there are human beings on the other side of these sunshine violations, and that the failure of any enforcement or accountability on the part of the sunshine violators has a very dramatic effect both on the person whose rights have been violated, we'll call them the complainant, and, if I dare say, on the implementation of democratic public policy in this city in general. And one of the ways, I guess I recognize that I'm not really getting through all that well. One of the ways I recognize this is that the minutes, several meetings ago I referred to ghettoization, and which is a very distinct concept, and it was reflected in the minutes as starvation. Ghettoization is something entirely different, having to do with blaming the victim for the conditions of servitude in which they're held. I have a friend who has a T-shirt that says, until morale improves, the beatings will continue. Actually, I have a classical quotation that kind of says the same thing. And it's a quotation from John Milton saying that they will pluck out your eyes and then curse you for your blindness. The only way that in our society we can guarantee full participation by the individuals is to break down the influence that money and entrenched bureaucracy holds. That power has to be balanced in some way by rules which guarantee public participation. And we're waiting very enthusiastically, very with bated breath, so to speak, for the time when we can see some of these violations enforced by this ethics commission, because it is crucial for public policy and democracy in our city. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I apologize to everyone for my lateness.
Commissioners, my name is Mark Solomon. I'm here to talk to you today about the position of fines officer here at the Ethics Commission. It's a charter-mandated commission, and up until recently, it had a special condition upon it, which required the incumbent to have a year's experience in campaign finance law. Last year, without bringing it forward to this body, the policy decision was made by the executive director and staff to remove that special condition. And as one can predict during a budget crisis, that individual has been bumped by someone more senior at the Department of Public Works. So the commission finds itself today, Monday, with a campaign fine officer with not even one whole day of experience on the job. Anyone who's looked at what campaign finance reporting requires knows there's a myriad of laws, a web of different regulations, a whole set of different interpretations and opinions from the FPPC, et cetera, and the city attorney, that it's going to take that person more than a year to get up to speed. Now, with that, this is a policy matter, but the executive director seemed to tell Stephen T. Jones, the Guardian, it was a personnel matter. It may be a personnel matter. He may have slipped and actually let the truth come out here. But I think it's pretty clear that when you've got a department staffer who's an award-winning staffer, who actually has done his job, who's brought in how much money every year, and that person's let go by a slip of the bureaucratic hand, what's that going to mean for this department's budget over the next year when that person's not bringing in fines? What's that going to mean to people who are having to comply with these laws that they know there's a newbie in here who's not got a clue as to how this works? I think Joe Lynn put it right before he passed away. He said that there's a meme in this department where there's some sort of false objectivity put into place, where the will of the voters that says you will enforce the campaign finance laws and do it valiantly is basically said, oh, no, that's just one position on the political spectrum. That's one over here, but there's one over here that says we shouldn't have it either, like the Supreme Court and John Roberts, Mitch McConnell. So the position that the executive director is taking here is we're going to go right down the middle, not do it too much, not do it too little. I think what we have here with the Carolyn Nee case, we've got it with the basically official misconduct on taking Sunshine referrals and trashing them, that you've got no real care with this commission and department to actually enforce the laws here. So what Joe said is that if you're going to take that approach, it's really time to defund this commission. We need to look at what you didn't report to this commission here, Mr. Executive Director, as to what the fiscal impacts of this removal of the special condition would be. You didn't tell it to the Board of Supervisors last year either as to what you're going to do to go ahead and mess up your revenue stream that goes to the general fund. At a time of budget crisis, that means services aren't going to get funded. That means that people are going to go ahead and elect folks to office, make spending priorities, but the commission's going to do its job by taking out $1 million or so from that. I think it's time to defund this commission except for public financing until we can figure out a way to get this commission to do its job as the voters have demanded, both the California voters and San Francisco voters with the Sunshine Ordinance and with the Ethics Reform Ordinance back in 1993. You've done it, John. You just set a situation here where you've delegitimated your department before the public, before the Board of Supervisors. We've got a situation now where you just messed it up.
Hi, my name is Kima Crossman. I wanted to also speak in support of Oliver Luby and the award-winning performance that he had with your commission and. I do think that that special condition that was removed, it was not a wise decision. I think that it's important, as my understanding, as Mr. Solomon just said, there's a myriad of laws that involve campaign finance, and to have no experience for that position, I think, is not wise. So I would recommend that you reinstate that special condition and rehire Mr. Luby in that position.
Does anybody else want to make public comment at this time?
Seeing none, we will move to the items on our agenda. I don't see Mr. Nee.
He's here.
Okay. Then we're going to go to Roman numeral 3, the consideration of policy recommendations regarding enforcement of the Sunshine Ordinance along the lines described here. This is something that we've been working on through the Ethics Commission and in collaboration with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. I want to say a special thank you to Commissioner Harriman and Mr. Grossman for spending some time to go through on a very detailed level some areas where we thought there was room for improvement, clarification, and bringing some different viewpoints together, and I think that's been very constructive. And the staff as well for their continued work on this set of issues. Do you want to tee this up for us?
Well, we had the initial discussion on this effort at the prior meeting and have reconstituted the recommendations based on that meeting and subsequent meetings that Commissioner Harriman had. So at this point, what we're recommending is that the commission go ahead with the decision points, make a decision on those as policy decisions, and then the staff will begin drafting the regulations that would implement those policies.
I'm going to ask Commissioner Harriman if she has something that she wants to add as we begin, since this is something that she has been very helpful to us. I'd like to say that I did notice Mr. Grossman's request that we wait till we took action on these policy positions until the Sunshine Task Force had a chance to tell us what their thinking was. I've given that some thought, and I'll be interested to see whether the commissioners feel, how they feel about this. But it seemed to me that we could act on the principles and still hear from the Sunshine Task Force while the staff is working on the, thank you, while the staff is working to develop the regulations, and that that would let us have an interaction between their thoughts and our going ahead with these, but that if we waited another cycle, we would still be having a back and forth, but we'd be that much further along. And I know that there are many things that we would all like to see actually developed here. And to the extent that there may be some as to which we disagree, we or the task force gives us some additional ideas, we would still have time at our next meeting to take those into account. The executive director tells me that it's not likely that the staff would be able to have the regulations back to us by the very next meeting. So I wonder if you have anything you want to add and how others feel about that notion about timing to move forward.
First of all, I wanted to thank Mr. Grossman as well for taking the time to meet with me. And I found it very helpful to dive into this and just really focus word by word on what the language of the Sunshine Ordinance has to say. I see these decision points as fairly broad, and the real work is going to be in the regulations. So I'd like to get the staff moving on those, right. And then there'll be plenty of time for input, and I'm actually hoping before we even see them, there'll be a lot of back and forth and input from the Sunshine Task Force on the draft regs. So I kind of agree with your approach just because I would like to see the ball keep moving along on these. I don't have... Other than that, I mean, my view of this is these are fairly broad decision points, so I don't have more to add to them.
I'd be interested in comments from other commissioners about, let's start with that process question, and then we can get into the merits of the three recommendations on the policy points. So does anybody have anything to add?
Sure. Yes, thank you. I would be supportive of that effort as long as we're clear that there does need to be ongoing communication with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. I was concerned when I saw Mr. Grossman's letter because I didn't know if that meant that he, in fact, hadn't met with Commissioner Harriman, because it seems like there are still some pretty significant disagreements. So I'm hesitant to approve these decision points without acknowledging Mr. Grossman's points and without hearing more from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. If we're very clear that we're approving in broad concept so that we can work closely with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force as we develop the regulations and we're open to the kinds of comments that Mr. Grossman makes, I would support that.
Anyone else? I think that's my sense, that is what we're going to continue to have. Commissioner Herr?
My view here is that we should talk about the decision points, and if it turns out that there's some disagreement or that it appears we're not entirely comfortable with them, then that merits a favor of deferring it, and the fact that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force has not had a chance to comment would weigh in favor of deferring it at that point. But I think we can hold off that decision until after we talk about the decision points.
And I'm one who thought that Mr. Grossman's request was a reasonable request, but I see that there is a representative of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force here, and so I guess
Mr. Grossman.
No, he's not the task force.
But Mr. I'm saying Neat. Go ahead. Go ahead, you made me mistake.
So perhaps we could hear from the person who's here from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force and get his point of view in connection with Mr. Grossman's request, that it be put over.
Are you suggesting that we do
order?
That first? Well, I'm I was thinking we would do, as Commissioner Hurst suggested, and discuss the merits and then get comment and certainly hear from Sunshine first at that point.
Sure.
That seemed reasonable to the commissioners?
So I guess I would be in favor of hearing from the Sunshine Owners Task Force first, because if there's a strong belief that we should not take this up and they feel that there's much more to talk about before we proceed, that would be useful prior to having that discussion.
I think we can do it in that order. I'm trying to think whether to bifurcate sort of the general, and then there may be specifics as we talk about each of these policies. But Mr. Nee, would you? Does this work? Is this a good time for you at this stage, or would you rather hear our?
I'm happy either way.
Okay. Thank you.
If you want me to give you some opinions now, I'm happy to do so.
Okay.
First of all, this is a kind of a long process, and so far you've. The commission has shown a great deal of patience with the task force in terms of giving us a lot of time and ability to render our opinions. And so I just want to repeat my thanks for that. In terms of whether to adopt this statement tonight, as I believe Commissioner Harriman has said, this is broad, and so, you know, if you wanted to adopt it tonight, maybe it wouldn't do any harm. However, I think, and I'm speaking for myself now. I'm not speaking for the task force because we have not had a chance to look at this. What I will do, if you decide tonight to hold off on this statement based on the June 7th memo, I will put it on the agenda for the next task force meeting, which is on June 22nd. One other thing I might suggest is that either on this statement or on the detailed policy that you adopt or both, we might want to have another joint meeting between the commission and the Compliance and Amendments Committee of the Task Force. I do have some specific matters I want to address with this statement, and I'll be, happy to give them now, or I can wait until you have public comment on it. It's up to you.
Your suggestion.
You know, I don't want to usurp any more time than anybody else should have.
Right.
There are a lot of people here who contributed an awful lot to the Sunshine process and concepts and so forth.
I'm consulting with the vice chair just because she has done so much of the work and has a good feel for this. Let's do them point by point and see what the commissioner's initial thought is. And I say initial so that we can have some, so that we can have a comment in light of that. I think that's the spirit in which both Commissioner Hansen and Commissioner Herr were speaking. Let's see what we think about each one, hear your thoughts, and then see what that inclines us to want to do.
So you want to hear my thoughts now? Or?
No, so we'll talk first. Right. We will speak about each one. Then we will invite the public, including you, to speak. And then we may talk in light of what we've heard.
Good
Sometimes
enough.
We go ahead immediately to vote. I think we want to have a little more, those of you who read the New York Times Magazine this week, an iterative process. There was a special feature on the word and concept of iterative. So let's start with decision point one and see whether there are commissioners who want to speak to that specific decision point, which is item 3A, captured in item 3A above.
Get a clarification from the staff on under decision point or under policy directives A, Number three, complaints brought directly to the Ethics Commission alleging a violation of the ordinance. That was taken from 67.35D. Is that the basis for that? Okay. And one thing that in some ways I found I had a question about was under 67.35D, it refers to any person may institute proceedings for enforcement and penalties under this act. And that suggests, I think, that the commission can take up a proceeding to enforce the Sunshine Ordinance if those requirements are met. Under 67.30, which I think is the basis for number two under A, referrals of alleged violations of the ordinance from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, it also it refers to referring the making a referral to a body with enforcement power. So are we suggesting that both A2 and 3, that the commission has the authority to act to both make a determination of a violation and then enforce and penalize? Okay. Thank you.
That's assuming somebody came to the commission first before instead of going initially to the task force, where I think they're more what they're more likely to do. But the way this is written, it seems to me people have that option under 67.35D to initiate.
We have a microphone, please.
Yeah, sorry. To institute proceedings here. And then if they did so, right, we could both make a finding and then move to enforcement and or penalty.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Okay.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments on this decision, first decision point? Okay. Since I've said we'd have some back and forth, why don't we hear from the public then about whether you have comments or questions about how this would operate?
Hi. Well, you've hopefully all read my memorandum, and I do at some point want to sweep away some trash that keeps floating around when we talk about ethics and violations of open government laws, and hopefully at some point today I'll have an opportunity to do that. But if you look at A3A, as I mentioned in the memo, there's this confusion on the part of the staff between violations, willful violations, enforcement of orders, and official misconduct. And what happens is that it permeates what the thought process appears to be when staff looks at these things. For example, at the top of page 3, under 3A, the lead-in says, under a plain reading of the above three sections of the ordinance, commission has enforcement jurisdiction over three categories of violations. And the second one is referrals of alleged violations of the ordinance from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. That couldn't be more wrong. The referrals are not of alleged violations. The referrals are of determined violations. And the referral is of an order to comply that has not been complied with. So this statement alone indicates the confusion that the staff has. And I have to make a broader point. These regulations are going to take some serious lawyering, very serious lawyering. And I don't think the staff has the capability of doing that, in all fairness. I've seen other things the staff has produced. I don't think that you can send this back to staff and let them just work it up and return it to you. I think it needs a lawyer's hand and a skilled lawyer who knows how to draft, who understands the principles that are involved between these various ways in which ethics gets these cases, and only then will you have at least a draft which has some critical understanding and explanation and articulation of what the role of ethics is under these rules. I could talk more about this, but I know my time is limited. Thank you.
Yes. Is this the time for public comment on all three decision points?
No, I'm just on the first decision point only. Please.
Well, maybe I'll reserve my comments for the second one.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much for staying with that structure. Does anybody else have a comment on this first decision point?
Richard Nee. And again, these are just my own personal perspectives. At the very top of 3A, you talk about regardless of whether the alleged violation was willful in nature. The task force is very unlikely to send to refer any violation that is not willful. The only reason we're going to refer something is that we have found willful failure to comply, either with the ordinance itself or with an order of determination or both. I want to go up for a second also to the citing of the sections of the Sunshine Ordinance under Administrative Code Section 6735C. It is an accurate statement there. However, there is kind of a cautionary note, and that is that a California court recently found that if a sunshine-based lawsuit is not frivolous and the plaintiff still loses, then the plaintiff does not have to pay the city and county legal fees. So that's just something to bear in mind for the moment. Thank you.
Could you just—I'm sorry. Before you sit down, could you just explain what the consequence of your first comment was? You said that the task force was unlikely to refer something that was not, in the task force view, willful. Were you arguing for a change in decision point one? Does that yield a different result, or just an observation that you expect that?
Kind of an observation. I mean, if the. The first paragraph does not refer necessarily to matters referred by the task force. It's just a general statement of policy on complaints, period. And then it says, regardless of whether the alleged violation was willful in nature. And what I want you to know is that when a complaint comes to you from the task force, it's not going to be for a violation that was not willful. It would be very, very unlikely for the task force to send to refer a violation that was not willful. Once we have received a complaint, found in favor of a plaintiff, and the respondent continues to violate, original violation was not willful, but then we order redress, and the respondent continues to refuse to comply, then it becomes willful. Otherwise, if we get a complaint, the respondent complies with the order of determination we issue, it's non-willful, we're not going to refer it.
Can I ask Mr. Nee a question?
Sure.
Thank you. Actually, two questions. You said now a couple of times that the task force is not likely to refer a non-willful violation.
That's correct.
Do you have an objection to keeping that language in because there might be a chance that would occur?
I have no objection to it because, again, this particular sentence, the first sentence in 3A, does not refer necessarily to violation complaints referred by the task force. It just says complaints and referrals that allege violation. Somebody might refer, you know, might complain directly to the Ethics Commission. You might find it not willful. That's, you know, so that particular phrase, whether the alleged violation was willful in nature, I'm not bothered by it. But I just want to make very clear what the relation is with the task force.
We do say, at least in the language that we're looking at in this memo, that referrals of alleged violations of the ordinance from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, we use that phrase. So we both talk about willful and then we talk about violations. So, I mean, I would suggest we leave it in because there may be a possibility, and I would like this to cover that if there's a possibility, as long as you're not in disagreement. Sounds like you're not. The other question I had was with regard to Mr. Grossman's comment about alleged, and could you comment on his comment that the violations are not alleged, but rather they're determined?
I am not a lawyer. Mr. Grossman is. But, you know, as the task force is, the commission is also a quasi-judiciary body. If you get a complaint, you know, maybe it starts kind of from step one again on the presumption of on the presumption of guilty until proven otherwise. On the other hand, you know, the task force puts an awful lot of effort into what it does. When we receive a complaint, we look into all the evidence presented from both sides. We look at which sections of the Sunshine Ordinance, the California Public Records Act, the Ralph M. Brown Act. We look at all of those that are applicable to the case. We have a deputy city attorney to help us determine which sections are applicable. We have, under the Sunshine Ordinance, an attorney assigned by the Society of Professional Journalists to work, to be on the task force as a voting member to help us determine, A, was there a violation, B, what section was violated, C, was the violation willful. So when the task force sends, refers a matter to the Ethics Commission, to us, it's, you know, as far as we are concerned, it is no longer an alleged violation. It is, as far as we are concerned, a determined violation.
Thank you very much.
Commissioners, Mark Solomon, I'd associate myself with Mr. Grossman's comments and would want to distinguish myself from Mr. Nee's comments. The finding of fact and the finding of law has been made by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. By the time it gets to this body, it's an enforcement action of the decision of the court, as one would see in a legal case. That you are the prosecution's agents, they have won the day, and you are enforcing what they say should happen. None of this we get to relitigate and redo it here at this body. That's not what the charter says, it's not what the administrative code says. What we need here is to look at the policy goals, which is to avoid Sunshine complaints being filed in the first place with the credible threat of enforcement and consequences upon city employees who up until this point, in this current executive director, have their complaints tossed out the window. You can't toss the complaints out the window. You've got to actually give them credence because they've been found to be true by a duly constituted body of the city and county of San Francisco. If that happens, then the standard will be set where city employees will say, I've got a Sunshine request, I better damn well serve it.
Actually, with your indulgence, I don't want to jump up three separate times. I'm very supportive of the work that Mr. Grossman has made in his memo. And I think there are just three points that I want to kind of emphasize. And I think it's probably more appropriate that I make them now, covering all of the situations. And then I won't have to jump up three separate times. Forgot to start my clock. What a shame. First, there seems to be a deliberate attempt to exempt appointed officials. saying that elected officials and department heads are the only ones that apply. I'm not sure what that's based on, but I think Mr. Grossman is very clear that appointed officials are subject to the Sunshine Ordinance, and they're also subject to your enforcement. One of the things that I like very much is that there are automatic hearings, and that's the things that's most important about your enforcement, is that you go directly to determinations and considerations at this level. One of the things that happens with respect to any kind of enforcement is that it's, by its very nature, must be open enforcement, which means that you directly take up these issues without them falling into a black hole of unknown consideration by the staff. One other quick point, and that is that if you're asking for public records, then of course the complainant is the complainant because he's the one that gets those records. With every other type of Sunshine violation, it is the public as a whole that has the underlying interest in that enforcement. And so while it's driven by that complainant, we have to be very careful not to assign any deleterious motives to that complainant, because that complainant is bringing an issue that affects all citizens with respect to respect for their rights. Thank you very much.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Hope Johnson. I was recently sworn in as a member of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, and I just wanted to agree with Mr. Grossman's objection to the word alleged. I think that it, in addition to his comments, I agree with his comments, I'm not going to repeat them, but I also think that we need to have some sort of language in there that emphasizes that a finding has already occurred. It sort of alleged disregards that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, or it lends itself to a disregard that we already held a hearing about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Peter Warfield. I have brought, and my group Library Users Association, which I head, has brought quite a number of complaints over the years to the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, and some of those have come to you as referrals. I also would like to second Mr. Grossman's comment about the top of page 3, where there's a reference to alleged violations, and also fill out a little bit an instance that has not been mentioned here. Referrals of alleged violations of the ordinance from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, certainly I would agree with others who have spoken before me, that what comes to you from the Sunshine Task Force is not an alleged violation. It's something for which the task force has had more than 10 years of experience in terms of its process, and those things that have gone, what comes to you is something that has passed through the, one might say, time-tested processes of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, and there has been a finding of a violation. There are all kinds of hurdles for that as well. 6 votes out of 11 seats. Often these are majorities, not just ordinary ones, but supermajorities when there are unfilled seats or absences and so on. So these are indeed, as Mr. Grossman would call it, a determined violation under a process from another body that's been much used. There is another aspect of issues that come before you that come from the task force, and those are cases which the task force, through its own direct observation, is sending to you, or it's a piece of what is being sent to you, and that is, for example, when nobody from a department shows up for a hearing as required under the law. The Sunshine Ordinance requires that for certain types of violations particularly and explicitly, the departments must show up for any hearing that's related. And I believe that's in Section 67.1 Point 21, where the 21A, according to experts behind me, E for Edward. And it talks about the process. It requires the attendance of a department when, for example, a document has been withheld. And so the Sunshine Ordinance has held hearings at which departments have simply not shown up or even sent a letter outright refusing to show up. So it's not as though you have to divine whether they did a good job or whether it's an opinion about maybe something is questionable about something that the task force heard about a matter that is beyond its borders, as it were, beyond the room. So if I bring a complaint about a document that wasn't given to me by a certain department, did they or did they not give it to me, et cetera, et cetera, so they hear the testimony. But when that department doesn't show up, or even worse, sends a letter asserting they don't have to or that they refuse to show up, and when that's a component of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force sending you a referral, that's something that I think is, unless they are hallucinating, something that's without question and incontrovertibly a violation that is coming again from their process, but also from their direct experience of a violation of a very clearly and straightforwardly stated law. Thank you.
Hi, Commissioners. Kimo Crossman. I wanted to speak in support of the interpretations submitted by Mr. Grossman, in particular the concern that your initial jurisdiction point here refers to alleged violations. I agree with all the other speakers except for Mr. Nee that there's no question that the task force has made a determination and that there's no question about needing to have another hearing and the burden of proof that the person didn't violate all that suggested in the original memo isn't applicable here. If the task force, which has been given the power to adjudicate these matters, has done so, then it's up to you to enforce those matters, just in the same way that when you receive an official misconduct referral from the mayor, you don't re-adjudicate the fact that he made that decision. You move forward in enforcing that official misconduct provision, as you did with EdGU. I also agree that appointed officials would be included as people that can be found who have committed official misconduct under Sunshine. And so I hope that you will actually, I do want to say that I think you should wait until the task force has had a chance to meet to give you a written response or possibly arrange for a joint meeting to have to hear their full input on this matter.
Can I ask Mr. Crossman a question?
Yes.
Just a clarification. I wasn't clear about your disagreement with Mr. Nee. What point were you disagreeing?
My understanding, as I think a number of other people sitting here, was that he seemed to have some confusion about whether an alleged violation that the task force had found to be a violation would be actually an actual violation when it came to you. It essentially sounded like to me and to other people sitting in the galley that he was thinking that potentially you could re-adjudicate Sunshine matters that had been already found by the task force to be violations. And everyone else here thinks that's an incorrect interpretation.
I appreciate that. And that was not my understanding of what Mr. Nee said, so maybe okay. Mr. Nee could clarify. It may be that I asked the question in a confusing manner, but what I was looking for was an answer to the question of willful violation versus violation. And in the language I referenced, it has the word alleged. I should not have used the word alleged. I was just reading the language as it was. So my understanding is from Mr. Nee, and I'd like a clarification. I'm not hearing that anybody of the public is saying that alleged is supported.
Okay. Well, I'll let him speak
Thank
to
you.
It.
Thank
What I believe I said is that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force is a quasi-judiciary body. So is the Ethics Commission. And if you get a referral from the task force, you may be in a position of having to start from that first step of not guilty until proven so. However, if you look down further, and I'm jumping the gun here, I realize, but if you look down further, bear with me, please, while I, okay. In under 3C, third sentence, because the task force will have already determined that respondent violated the ordinance, respondent will have the burden of proof to show that he or she did not violate the ordinance. So, given that, anyway, given that, going back to A, as far as we are concerned, as far as the task force is concerned, and this is what I said, as far as the task force is concerned, the violation has been determined, and that's when we send it to you.
Thank you.
Any other commissioners want to speak to or pick up any of those thoughts?
Let me just address what Mr. Nee just where he just left off to explain what's what. I actually think if you cross out the word alleged violation at the top of page 3, it doesn't change anything about what's in the decision points or what follows for the following reason. Yes, the task force would have made a referral to us because it's found a violation. But as you can see in the way you just pointed to Mr. Nee in paragraph under paragraph C, all that means, like anything else that gets referred to us, is we have to do our job. Because it's and our job isn't to just put a rubber stamp on it. That's not, we're put in the position in the language of this ordinance has us in the same category as a court. So we would do what a court would do. Which, and in this case, because the referral, because the task force has already found a violation, our job is much more limited. In other words, the burden of proof is on the respondent because they've already been found, that they've found a violation. But we're still a hearing. It bypasses a lot of steps. It goes directly to a hearing, just the way, for example, at the EDU matter was referred to us. We had a hearing, we had briefing, we had all kinds of determinations that we had to make. We were not about to just accept the mayor, rubber stamp what the mayor did without doing our job, and it would be the same thing here. What's the how do we enforce? Well, we'd take a look, we'd look, see do we basically affirm or not, and then determine the penalty. But, and so referrals get a sort of exalted level. I don't know if exalted is the right word, but it gets less review. It jumps a lot of processes because you go directly to a hearing. It's different.
It shifts the burden.
It shifts the burden of proof, which makes it harder on the person who's already been found to have violated the ordinance. So you can cross out the word violation at the top of page 3.
You mean
but
violation
it,
or alleged?
Alleged, sorry, at the top of page 3, but it doesn't change sort of the recommendations that follow, and it certainly doesn't change the decision point. The decision point uses the word alleged violations because some will be referrals of violations by the task force, found violations, and then there are other things that we're dealing with that would be alleged violations, so it would include encompasses both.
So we hear you on the larger, go ahead, yeah.
Does anything in the code require the task force to only make referrals of found violations? Because if the task force can refer alleged violations, then seemingly this language gives the task force more bandwidth to refer a number of things to the commission.
I Just to be sure I understand. So if, for example, the task force said we are either backed up or there's something about a particular allegation that's come to us that we think is not appropriate, possible, we want some of those to go to the Ethics Commission at this stage, and others we will hear. You're trying to make sure the door is open to both.
Well, I just want to,
if that's law,
I just want to make sure that I understand what a referral is, and that the code is clear that a referral made by the task force requires a finding of violation. If that's the case, then I understand the concern about the word alleged. But the language as I read it, just referral is somewhat vague and subject to more than one interpretation, as far as I can see.
Well, no. Well, can I? I'll read it to you. So as I read it, it says that the task force shall make referrals to a municipal office with enforcement power under this ordinance or under the California Public Records Act and the Brown Act whenever it concludes that any person has violated any provisions of this ordinance or the acts. So okay. It seems to me they have to make that conclusion before they can make the referral.
Okay.
I've heard a couple of, I've heard the comments here as well as from the audience that the word alleged seems to have some incendiary or is itself a problem. And Commissioner, as Commissioner Harriman points out, I agree with her that it doesn't change the responsibilities that we have to deal with referrals. So one possibility would be to change the language to the extent that it is creating a barrier among us. And then when we get to the procedural questions, understand that we may have different perspectives on what the responsibilities of the commission are at that point. But I really do think some of us want to show you that we hear that, although we may have different ideas of what follows from a referral of a determination or conclusion by the task force. I wonder how the commissioners feel about that. Or am I overreading?
The word, I don't know what it means to change a word in a memo.
And it's not in the decision point.
It is in the decision,
itself,
but the decision point is broader.
But it refers back to the language.
I mean, why can we change the decision point to say jurisdiction over referred violations by the ordinance task force and allege and other alleged violations?
Sure.
Of the Sunshine Ordinance.
What are we reading the decision point to be?
I'm wondering if we could just delete the word alleged and substitute it with referred violations of the Sunshine Ordinance.
It's broader
but
than
it's
that.
But it's broader than yeah. that.
That's because why you have
it
to
cover referred alleged and violations that come to us from any place.
Yep. Then
not
I
just from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force.
Right. Somebody, we're talking about the de novo of somebody who just comes straight
right.
to
right.
us.
Right.
And nobody's attempted to make any finding yet.
If we want to include that, then I would include it, but not use the word other, because that implies that some of the violations from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force would be alleged.
And change it to commission's jurisdiction over violations and alleged violations of the Sunshine Ordinance.
Could you say that again? Referred and alleged?
Over violations and alleged violations.
Yep. Yep. So the suggestion was regarding violations and alleged violations, recognizing that they come from different places. One are the point being violations as determined by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force and alleged violations brought to us from external parties. Mr. Grossman is not.
It doesn't. Let's just
happy.
With
he
that,
hasn't spoken,
I'm actually with that change in the language. I would move that we adopt decision point number one.
As soon as we have a motion, we'll take public comment
okay.
on the motion.
I just want to mention one thing. I have hearing aids, and I'm actually having trouble.
hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if you would use your mics, I'd appreciate
okay.
it. Thank
the
you.
Language, sorry. The language that we're considering, we've changed it to, says the commission's jurisdiction regarding violations and alleged violations of the ordinance, to distinguish between findings of violation as determined by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force process and alleged violations when they are brought to us from third parties where no one has made any investigation or finding yet. Okay, there's been a motion made by Commissioner Harriman. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion among the commissioners? Public comment on the motion. This is on decision point one, the entire.
Kimo Crossman, yeah. I feel like, at least in reference to the way that I'm interpreting what's happening here, is that the reason people are concerned about the use of the word alleged violations is because it would indicate what's going to happen after that, whether there's a hearing about enforcement or whether there's another adjudication of the matter. And that's, I think, the reason people are concerned about the use of the word alleged. It's not so much the word, it's the fact that what I'm hearing you indicate is that you're going to be having another adjudication no matter how things get to you. Now, maybe you have a slightly different bar depending on how it got to you, but the fact that you're going to re-adjudicate a finding by the task force rather than just move to enforcement is the big problem. And whether you have the word alleged or not in the sentence, I don't think is the issue. The issue is how are you going to treat findings by the task force after they come to you and they've been found to be a violation. And it, again, if you have another hearing, then what's the point? I mean, for the public, the law already provides for accelerated treatment of public record matters in the statute, and yet now you can have a whole other series of hearings after it's already gone through 3 to 4 hearings at the Sunshine level, no matter how it gets to you. And that, that is not what's envisioned for Sunshine. It envisions prompt delivery of information that's been requested.
Thank you. And we will get to that issue in item C.
Yeah, commissioners, we've got a bifurcated process here involving two different bodies. The first body is the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force that has a guilt or innocence phase to the process. Once they have completed their duty and found a violation, they refer it to you. Then this body has the second part of the bifurcated process where you do the punishment phase of that process. You don't do a finding of guilt or innocence. That door is closed. The task of this body is to go ahead and deal with how do we deal with enforcement. Now, my question to the executive director, the chair of the task force, how many times has this body been referred as the de novo body, a Sunshine alleged complaint, where it's had to go ahead and take this track? I would suggest that this body defer from that because it's already complicated enough and deal with the main line of things coming before you, which are legitimate found violations that are referred to this body for the second half of the process, which is the enforcement. Thank you.
Anyone else on decision point one?
I think that there's a learning curve involved. I think there's a notion yet that somehow the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force does not have the status, dignity, or ranking of a true commission or board. And the problem probably starts way back with the city attorney claiming that the charter always trumps the Sunshine Ordinance. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the task force was formed by a voter initiative. It ranks equal to and in probably in some respects higher authority than anything in the city charter because its function is enabled by two sections of the state law, the California Public Records Act and the Brown Act, which allows the local agency to adopt rules which provide, in the case of records, greater access, faster access, and more, and create more efficiency. The fact is that in the old days, before the 36th Charter, a voter-initiated ordinance was treated as part of the Charter. It was an appendix to the Charter. The point here is that the task force is given an express function under the ordinance. That's its job. That's what its role is in this respect. It hears these issues of a question of public records disclosure. It makes findings after, and it then goes through another process to determine whether its determination has been complied with by the respondent agency official or department. Only then does it come back to the task force, and if it determines that there's been no compliance, what shows up here is a referral not of the violation, but of its order. The order is cast in stone. It's a non-appealable order. You're not an appellate court. Your job is enforcement. You can't review the record to determine whether it was done properly or anything of that sort. Otherwise, what the complainant is ending up doing is, in effect, what he did or she did over a period of 3-5 months before the task force. That is the whole purpose of the enforcement provision, and that's what your function is. So you can't relitigate it, you can't hear the same facts, you can't hear somebody from a department say, well, the city attorney said it was okay for me not to disclose it. That's all been done. It's all been finished, heard, one time, two times, three times before the task force. And your job is to determine what is that department or official going to do when you tell them, turn over that record, and he doesn't do it. Thank you.
May I ask Mr. Grossman a question? Mr. Grossman? Hi, sir. Just a question for you. Under 67.35D, is it your view then that a person instituting proceedings for enforcement and penalties is only seeking enforcement and not a finding of facts? In other words, has to be a finding before, in order for the commission to enforce?
No, you know, the Sunshine Ordinance, I've talked to a number of the people who worked and drafted it, Tom Burke and others. There are a lot of kind of fuzzy gaps that don't quite fit neatly together. And
I
that
think
would
we may be,
be
able to get a consensus on that.
Pardon?
I think a consensus may be available on that point, exactly, that we're all struggling.
Yeah, well, the point is that if you want a public record and you want to sue for it, it's right in the Public Records Act. You don't have to rely on the ordinance. So that provision is in there for, I think, the same purpose, except if they want to short-circuit the task force or some other enforcement body, they come right to ethics. But I think that would be the only purpose in doing it. Nobody has done it, as far as I know, except in one case where they filed both before the task force and before the ethics commission. But I don't see D as significant in light of the other provisions in the Sunshine Ordinance.
And so the term enforcement, you think, can have a different meaning under 67.35D than it does in 67.35D?
I think it's enforcement of the right, okay, as opposed to your enforcement of an order. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments? We have a motion before us made by Commissioner Harriman, seconded by Commissioner Ward. Okay, seeing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. Let's talk now about decision point two, which involves item 3B above, with respect to establishing penalties for violations. Commissioners, comments or questions? Unless somebody's ready to move to a motion at this point. I have a quick question while people have a look. This goes to the text and not to the deeper substance, but the sentence, the commission may determine whether to impose monetary fines or lesser penalties. Seemed a little odd to me because sometimes there are penalties or requirements that are greater than the effect for the person of the monetary, and I didn't want to assume that all other penalties are less than money. We're not adopting the language, but it seemed to me that in future discussions we may want to just talk about other penalties rather than lesser, because there are injunctive kinds of orders, or there may be penalties that are more consequential than a fine, in this case, quite substantial ones that may be more onerous or serious in our view. Commissioners?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd make only one comment. This is one of those places where the ordinance itself gives almost no guidance. It does use the word penalty in section 67.35D. It says for enforcement and penalties, and that's the only place where it uses the word penalties. And so it's from that that we are then making the conclusion we have a right to write regulations that let people know what those penalties are. But that's it. It's a sort of, there's not a lot there to give us guidance. But because it does use the word penalties and it's there in that one section, I think it's safe to assume that the people at San Francisco assumed that we would pick up on that and do something about it. And that's the purpose of decision point number two.
And by extension, that given the authority and indeed the responsibility, some would say, to have penalties when there have been violations, it seems far preferable to plan them ahead so that there's notice and an opportunity to create a reasonable structure rather than to imagine penalties case by case, which would
probably be
unfair and time consuming and be contrary to an ability to be predictable and to stage things, and also defeat the purpose of getting compliance earlier in the process. If people know what the penalties might be, they can take that into account in shaping their behavior, as one of our speakers earlier said. Do I hear a motion, or are there other comments or questions from the commissioners?
I had a question.
Sure.
I think two points. One, we have the same issue with regard to the language of alleged in this memo referring to decision point two. And then a question about whether it was intentional to leave out appointed officials, as members of the public have commented on.
Is decision point two you're looking at?
Yep, B.
B. The background for decision point two.
In the memo.
Okay, because penalties can only be for violations. Not for, you can't have a penalty for an alleged violation.
Right, and I'm just referring to the language in section B outlining how we got to decision point two. So it's not language in the decision point, but it's background. And in that information, we also talk about elected officials and department heads. We don't identify appointed.
That's quoting from the ordinance itself, which only that part of that paragraph quote is quoting from the ordinance, which only gives us authority. I'll just read it. It says, complaints involving allegations of willful violations of this ordinance, the Brown Act, or the Public Records Act by elected officials or department heads of the city and county of San Francisco shall be handled by the Ethics Commission. That's it. That's what 67.34 says.
Thank you.
Okay. I think you may be right that there are places within that paragraph where alleged is no longer the case, where a violation has been found, and that's why we're thinking about penalties. Since we're acting only on the policy and not the wording, I think we can just be sure that when we do the final version that we get that right.
I just think that's important to say, because I don't have any problem with decision point two, except that the language in decision point two refers to approving the policy directive as set forth in item 3B. So that's why the language in 3B becomes important. So as long as we understand that we're approving these decision points in concept, and we will work out exactly how they will be, what the regulations will look like and what the precise language will look like, then I'm comfortable with that.
It will be back, clearly. Okay.
I move that we adopt decision point two.
I'll second.
Public comment?
Yes, Commissioners. Mark Solomon. I don't see any language in here that talks about compelling the production of public records in service of the Sunshine Ordinance. This is not Draco's Cove. We're not trying to go ahead and be SM top here. The point is, how do we get the documents into the public's hand, first of all? And that's what the point of the Ethics Commission doing its job should be in this case. The other issues here are labor issues. How do you deal with someone who's a rank-and-file worker? What kind of penalties is the city allowed to impose upon them, right? Is the commission allowed to take money from the general fund belonging to one department and put it into the general fund for the city so they can be an economic penalty on the department head that may fall short of official misconduct? What are the tools that can be used here? I don't see very much. It's going to require some serious legaling and lawyerizing here from labor lawyers and people in the city attorney's office to figure out what the range of possibilities are. But again, we need to figure out ways that this commission can say, you have 5 days to produce this document. Otherwise, things happen. So there's got to be something that actually compels the production of documents. Thank you.
Mr. Sankari, would you like to speak to that?
Well, the purpose of the regulations would be to spell all of this out, and that the commission at some point the task force will see the draft regulations and work to...
I'm sorry, Mr. Grossman. I think Mr. Grossman...
With the commission staff will draft the regulations. We'll send them to the Sunshine Task Force, and the commissioners will review them to make sure that they're inclusive of the policies that we set out here. So the actual spelling out of all those procedures will be the regulations themselves.
Yeah, but this motion you pass, if it's going to set a policy goal, should say compel the production of documents per the Sunshine Ordinance, because that is the entire reason we're here. I'd much rather piles of paper than see people get punished.
I think we understand that that's exactly the point of why we're here. And it's the entire point of both of our responsibilities. Mr. Nee?
Richard Nee, a couple of things. Regarding the imposition of monetary fines or lesser penalties, I guess it's been a couple of years already since the commission had its joint meeting with the Compliance Amendments Committee of the Task Force, and I believe it was Mr. St. Croix who pointed out at the time that the task force doesn't provide guidance with respect to what penalties should be imposed when we refer a violation. Shortly after that, the Compliance Amendments Committee did insert into a package of amendments that we're still working on a provision that would enable the task force to recommend fines ranging from anywhere from $500 to $5,000 for a violation. That particular amendment has not reached the full task force, and as a matter of fact, the entire package is probably not going to reach this November's ballot, but I want all of you to know that it is in there, and as you go forward, you might want to consider doing something like that, maybe even establishing something like that on your own. Second, There are a couple of allegeds that I would like to see stricken here. In the top line, with respect to alleged willful violations, the commission may order elected official or department head to comply with the ordinance. I don't think you're going to impose a fine or penalty on an alleged violation. I think you're going to do it on a determined violation. So not only would I strike the word alleged, I would also substitute the word may order the elected official with shall order the alleged official. In the next paragraph, again, top line, I believe the word alleged should be stricken. Finally, there's one other point I want to raise here, and that is may order the or shall order the elected official or department head to comply with the ordinance or making a finding of official misconduct if there is no compliance. One of the things that we butt up against is respondents argue, and I think they've argued successfully before the commission, that their failure to comply with the ordinance or with an order of determination stemmed from their acting on advice from counsel, from a member of the city attorney's office. And there have been a number of cases. We have found on the task force a number of cases.
Why don't you finish your point?
Where the city attorney's advice has been erroneous. That's one of the reasons we have an attorney as a voting member of the task force. So when they come to you, when we send up an order of determination, a referral on a violation of an order of determination, the reason we've done that is that we have found the city attorney's advice to be erroneous. A particular area, and this is something where Kimo Crossman is very well versed, and that is the production of electronic records in their native format. This is something on which the Sunshine Ordinance and the California Public Act, even though I can't pronounce it, California Public Records Act is very clear. People, citizens have a right to request electronic documents in their native format. And the city attorney's office has consistently argued, well, not necessarily, because there's metadata that may need to be, may be exempt or prohibited from disclosure. Well, there's plenty of software out there, and it's cheap and easy to use, that can delete any metadata that shouldn't be disclosed. So we don't find that argument valid, and yet respondents are consistently coming to us and saying, well, we're only going to provide the PDF because that's what the city attorney says we should do. So, again, that's one of the reasons we have an attorney, and that is if somebody violates the ordinance and they're doing so on the advice of counsel, we don't think that's a valid excuse.
We're not voting on the specific language. We will just cross out the two words alleged just to avoid any misunderstanding. Mr. Crossman, and then we have one other commenter, and then I think anyone else wants to comment, would you please come forward quickly?
Kimo Crossman. Let's see. I wanted to just say I did look up 6734, willful failure shall be official misconduct, and want to point out that it says willful failure of any elected official, department head, or other managerial city employee. I don't see a reference to managerial city employees in the descriptive language you have here. And I think it's a fairly significant omission because you only have elected officials and department heads. So I would strongly encourage that you include, there's been some talk about appointed appointed people. I'm not sure about that right at the moment, but at least managerial employee, that's exactly what the law says. So that needs to be in here, I think. with regards to the fines when they come up, I would definitely suggest that they be paid personally by people. I would point out that not only is this about getting records, it's also about public bodies that aren't allowing the public forum process rights to be exercised which could mean that you would potentially be telling public bodies that they have to revote a matter because they didn't follow Sunshine or the Brown Act. So it's not just a matter of getting production of records. There's a 10-day requirement, and Sunshine says that new contracts have to be available for 10 days before they're voted on. That if that was violated, you'd have to direct the public body to re-vote on that matter. And I would, of course, encourage that fines be personally paid rather than by the department, and that they be based on a percent of the net income of the person. That's what they do in Switzerland. You don't pay a traffic ticket of a set amount. You pay it based on your net percent of your net income, and that makes it more more real to everybody. It's a progressive way of finding people. Thank you.
Yes, if I could, just a very brief point. And I think everybody on this side of the bench, the balustrade here, is making assumption about what we know that you may or may not know. So let me explain that as part of the Sunshine Ordinance process.
Could you lift the microphone?
Sure. The Sunshine Ordinance Task Force processes 3 or 4 dozen complaints a year. They go for a hearing on jurisdiction, and then they're determined whether it's a violation or not. There's what's called an order of determination, and then goes to a compliance committee. And then if it's found that there's no cooperation, or it's very serious, or in some way it cries out for further enforcement, it's only then that it comes back to the task force and is referred to the Ethics Commission for enforcement. So it's not only is it a very small subset of the violations that actually get referred to you, but it's only those most serious and most willful failures at compliance. And the Sunshine Task Force attempts at compliance before they consider referral. And that's why I think people are very concerned about this worst alleged, because the poor complainant with these violations of the Sunshine Ordinance have been through 4, 5, or more hearings already before it reaches the stage where it's referred to the Ethics Commission.
Sure.
Peter Warfield again. The discussion, for the most part, until Mr. Crossman just spoke, has talked about violations as though the only violations you're dealing with are document production violations. In fact, the Sunshine Ordinance provides for quite a few other types of violations, as does the Brown Act and the Public Records Act. And those kinds of violations, and believe me, I speak from personal and direct experience, include such things as not or non-timely production of documents. If your only objective and your only perspective is did or did not the person get documents, then you're forgetting about or ignoring the timeliness requirements. There's a phrase, justice delayed is justice denied. If I have to wait 6 months or 8 months to get plans that were 50% plans back then, and now I get those plans when in fact they're completed, it doesn't really do me any good that what they should have given in 1 day or in 10 days has been given in 6 months. And even if finally, after a knockdown, drag-out series of efforts by a complainant, the department does finally turn over documents, there may still well be, and even if you get them to turn over the documents, there may be, if you like, a residue that's very serious. If they're going to be allowed to make knockdown dragouts that finally end up with the Ethics Commission, and all you're going to say is give them the document and then be satisfied, then the timeliness issue, which is very important, would have been ignored. So you've got timeliness issues. You've also got violations of Brown Act meetings. So somebody who didn't get a chance to speak when they should have, or was prevented from speaking, or wasn't given a fair shot at speaking in terms of time. You've got things like non-attendance at the Sunshine Ordinance, where the ordinance requires attendance by the department. That fundamentally is not just some kind of a technical thing. That deprives the task force of the ability to question the department, to find out what, from the department's perspective, was the right thing. There's a whole range of problems when that happens, and that's not necessarily something that can be fixed now by having the department show up for a hearing. So there's a range of violations here that I think you should be aware of, and include with the scope of this section. I'm a little bit puzzled by the phrase that was mentioned earlier by one of the commissioners, imposing monetary fines or lesser penalties. Certainly a finding of official misconduct isn't necessarily a lesser penalty, and there seem to be other things that you might do that would encourage or strongly encourage departments to comply with the law when they have violated it that might be considerably more effective even than monetary fines, but that will leave to you. But again, the whole scope of this needs to be inclusive of Brown Act and Public Records Act meetings, as well as timeliness, as well as the whole scope of it that's covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to recap, we've taken out the words alleged in the first line of each paragraph, and we've changed the word lesser to other. So even though we're not adopting literally this language, just so that we're on a similar wavelength, we will treat that as the language going forward. Mr. Grossman, and then if anyone else who hasn't spoken has a comment, and then Commissioner Hansen would like to speak.
I don't think I've spoken on this issue.
No, I welcome. No, I said,
okay,
and then anyone
again,
else.
I'm having a little
I'm sorry,
trouble.
I said anyone else who has not spoken. And you have not yet spoken.
Okay, so. Thank you. So anyway, in my memo, I tried to point out that the way the staff has described the process of enforcement using official misconduct and penalties it leaves a little bit to be desired. Again, you know, I'm unfortunately stuck with the notion that I was educated as a lawyer and I spent over 55 years practicing law, and I can't get away from the fact that when this stuff comes up, I can only see it in the way a lawyer would see it. And it's clear to me, as I said earlier, this requires serious lawyering, and in order to do serious lawyering, you have to understand what it is that you're writing about and have a clear picture of the relationship of the various pieces. This is a good example. 6734 is not limited to officials and department heads. It includes other managerial employees. So if there's a case of a willful failure, not a willful violation, willful failure that gets results in a finding of official misconduct by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force that comes to you, then you treat it as an official misconduct matter. It's no longer a violation of the Sunshine Ordinance or California Public Records. It is now official misconduct, and it's been so found. Well, what do you do? Well, you've got a whole bunch of different things you can do. However, if it comes to you as an enforcement of an order of the task force, that's a different story. Now you have a role that's different, because there's no investigation of a referral by your staff. They can't do that. You have the same two people that were there before the task force. So the only issue, in my reading of the law, is enforcement. So you say to the department head, official, or agency person, there's been a finding. Been an order. You haven't complied with it. Explain why. And if they can't give you a legitimate reason, which they did not present when the matter was heard in its entirety several times before the task force, you say, okay, you deliver that public record, or you fix the problem in that public forum. and you give them 20 days or 30 days or whatever you think is appropriate. And if they don't do it, then you say to them, section whatever in the charter, that what you've done is official misconduct. And if we find that that's official misconduct, you can lose your position, you can be removed or suspended. And it'll only take one of those where you either remove a department head or an official because he wouldn't comply with your order, not the task force order. And believe me, that will be the end of it. Every other one will do it. And that's the whole point of the process, because it becomes important enough to the community to make sure that if the Ethics Commission says something has to be done, it gets done, or that person loses his job. And I think that's a very important distinction, and it has to be kept in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you. The question I had was actually goes back a ways, but has been referred to now a few times, and that's following Commissioner Harriman's response to my question about appointed officials being left out. I am curious about Commissioner Harriman in particular, anyone else's read of the language in Admin Code 67.34, where managerial city employees is included, and why that is then also not included in our language.
Because we don't have, because the way that that's worded, if you read 67.34, it consists of two sentences. The first sentence includes other managerial city employees. So certainly other managerial city employees can be deemed to have official misconduct if they violate the ordinance, but we don't have jurisdiction. The way this is written, it specifically excludes jurisdiction by the Ethics Commission over those managerial city employees, because the very next sentence only gives us jurisdiction over elected officials or department heads in the exact same paragraph.
So can you just respond to Mr. Grossman's on page 3 of his memo, his section on penalties and fines, where he takes issue with that?
I disagree with Mr. Grossman. I disagree with his reading of it. I agree a referral can be made for enforcement, but I don't think that we have, given the way this is written, our authority over official misconduct cases is narrowed by the ordinance itself. That's how I read it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I read it that way, but I would concur with those who are saying this is going to take serious lawyering, and that's not my job.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I think we can all agree that it's not the best written ordinance, and it leaves a lot to be desired, and it leaves a lot of question marks. But when you read my own views, when you read one section, and the section is so specific, then I have to take the ordinance at its face.
It seems very odd to me that in one sentence we would include managerial city employees, in the next sentence we wouldn't. I don't know if that's sloppy drafting or if that was intentional. But
I agree, but the second sentence happens to be the one that uses the words Ethics Commission. But I agree with you that it does seem odd, but I think you have to read it as though it was done deliberately. I don't know how else to read it.
Right. I mean, there's no simple way to reconcile the two, and choosing the one that is the most specific and the narrowest is a traditional legislative drafting solution to inconsistency. Because to argue the other way, you'd have people saying, but you don't have that authority. And if we try to do it, we'd have a comparable argument that would land in this direction, saying, but look at this very specific sentence that follows that doesn't say anything about the category in which I fall.
Although the alternative is that the commission can handle those involving managerial city employees, but has exclusive jurisdiction over anything involving a department head or elected official.
We have, is there any additional public comment? We have a motion on the table made by Commissioner Ward and seconded by Commissioner Harriman. Unless there are other comments by the commissioners, I will call the question. All in favor of decision point two regarding item 3B, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? I think we heard everybody. Okay. Decision point three, which we have, the merits of which we have discussed several times now. Commissioners, any comments or questions? Or do I hear a motion? If it's your pleasure, I can go to public comment and then come back to a motion, unless somebody's ready to make a motion to take us to that stage.
I'll move that we adopt decision point three.
And I'll second.
Thank you. Any other commissioners have questions or comments at this point?
I have a question about where the statutory authority is for making, for creating our own standard of review of referrals.
Are you speaking particularly to the third sentence, the burden of proof?
No, I'm referring to just in general, where, and this may be just a naive question, but where does the commission, where are we getting the authority to make, to set what the standard of review and how we will adjudicate this matter? Where does that come from?
Silent.
It's silent. It's silent so that we are figuring, okay. So the idea is that we're trying to create some mechanism to efficiently deal with these referrals and that, okay.
Does the city attorney want to, you're,
it's not. I don't
have anything to add. You want to add
anything?
Thank
you. I have just a general comment, and that is that while I understand that what we're attempting to do is to approve in concept and to develop specific language and to resolve some of the many issues still outstanding, and it's really only on that basis that I'm comfortable approving or have been comfortable approving the previous two decision points. It seems to me that with regard to the third decision point, there's such a key component that is troubling to me that I'm having more difficulty thinking about approving decision point three, and that is this question of whether it's the language that's been talked about, the burden of proof, where does that lie, the language that we've heard that the commission needs to conclude, thus implying that we're making a determination, language that we see in Mr. Grossman's memo with regard to our supposed lack of ability to gather additional information. I mean, all of that seems so key to this particular decision point. I don't know what the concept would be that we're approving if we're not approving that that language in at its most basic form. So it's just a comment. I'd like to hear from the public about that, but I think there have been many comments about it that leave me still unclear about how to approach this.
I mean, I also have some concerns about how this affects the speed at which final decisions will be made, and if we're not tethered to any statutory requirement to do this, then I guess I am in favor of a more streamlined hearing of some sort, to whether it be an order to show cause hearing or whether it be something similar to that. The one thing that concerns me about having a summary proceeding to approve or enforce a Sunshine Act referral is, what happens if a referral is made from the task force that is for a willful violation of a elected official or department head? I'm much less comfortable with a summary proceeding or even a proceeding that has a burden-shifting element in that situation, because that seems to be one that's pretty clearly given to the discretion of the Ethics Commission. So I don't know if, Mr. St. Croix, you can speak to what would happen in that situation or if that could ever happen.
Well, yes, it could happen. I mean, this is, among all else, I think this is the most responsive of these proposals to what the Sunshine Task Force has desired. Because right now, when we get a referral from them, it goes to the investigators. They investigate the referral as if it was an original complaint, and then the complaint would have to go through the process of whatever the investigation entails, a probable cause hearing, a hearing on the merits. This essentially cuts that whole part out.
But the fact that it's better than what is before or more streamlined than what is before doesn't mean that it's what's appropriate. I guess
I don't know how you can take a process where we get a referral and put it on the calendar and have a hearing on it and make that any more expeditious. Because, you know,
I guess it depends on what our standard of review is and what our responsibility is as the commission to review that. And
well, that's why we're asking you to tell us we're going to do this, and then we draft the regulations for the procedure. Because obviously, for the example you used, if a department head had a charge of official misconduct because of noncompliance, the commissioners could determine, yes, this happened. There's sufficient evidence in front of us at that hearing. Otherwise, you can say there's not enough evidence here. We need more information.
And even what Mr. Grossman just said, he envisioned as a process was that the respondent would appear before us and would be asked to show cause why they hadn't followed the order or the request, which is a hearing. I mean, that's what it is. It's a hearing.
Although that is different than having essentially the proof presented all over again.
So what I've been hearing from the beginning from the other side of the bar was that the found or determined violations by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force was that they came to us. We had no alternative but to enforce the determination that had been found there, which would not include someone coming before us and being asked to show cause. We would receive this determination, and we would simply impose a penalty. But that's not what I just heard. And so, and I agree with John that what could be more expeditious than eliminating the intermediate step that had existed and having the person come directly before us without the staff's involvement.
So I just want to add, you actually hit it on the nail with one of your questions earlier. I think it was your question to Mr. Grossman about the word enforcement appears twice, really, in this ordinance. One, it says referrals can come to us for enforcement. And then where you see enforcement is section 67.35. I think the only way you can read that is to read what's in 67.35 spells out our authority. Otherwise, none of this makes any sense. So if you're trying to make sense of the statute and make it intelligible, then you look at D, it says court or ethics commission. So whatever the court can do, it must be the ethics commission can do as well, because it says either one. and that lays out A, B, and C. And to me, that's what gives the framework for the regulations, you know, these regulations that need to be written. But it has to be within the language of the ordinance, and to me, that's 67.35. And it certainly anticipates more than just stamping something, because it says if the court finds that the action is frivolous, it can have the other side pay attorney's fees. Well, how do you determine that if you're not doing some kind of hearing? So I don't know. There's something here. It's the only place where the only other place where the word enforcement arises.
Commissioner, any other comments?
Public comment?
Kimo Crossman. First of all, I just want to remind you again, this is on page 2 of Mr. Grossman's memo towards the bottom. The public policy is to provide fast and efficient access to public records as embodied in CPRA 6258. The times for responsive pleadings and for hearings in these proceedings shall be set by the judge with the object of securing decision on these matters at the earliest possible time. Also, an order by the court directing disclosure of public official or in addition to essentially the strong public policy is for rapid production or resolution of a violation. And if you're suggesting that there's going to be another set of hearings here at the Ethics Commission after it's probably gone through 3 or 4 months of hearings at Sunshine, that's not rapid, especially when I think of how the official misconduct proceedings for EdGU were treated. That did drag on for a couple of months, and it was never even fully finished. So if you're looking to have official misconduct proceedings after it, it's going to be a big, long process. I think Mr. Grossman misspoke when he suggested that if someone were to then produce the records when they came to you and say, okay, all right, well, I'll give you the records. They've already violated. It's like what Mr. Warfield said. They can't then at the very end say, okay, I didn't seriously mean to violate. Here's the records that they wanted. Newspapers all the time are trying to get timely access to information to write stories. And if public officials can delay and obstruct until after a decision has been made, then there's no point in having an open records law. So the idea that someone can fix the problem by the time they get here is completely ridiculous. And it is not supported by the idea of a quick resolution under the state law of getting access to information. So I actually agree with the commissioner, I'm not aware. I'm a little bit surprised by this whole burden of proof provision that's been inserted here as to how the commission would decide whether a violation had still been occurred. I mean, I think with regards to what scenarios in which the task force has made a finding, then the hearing that you have is just an enforcement hearing. So it's okay, you've been found to have violated. The hearing is, how are we going to enforce it? That's it. That's the only question for that matter.
Can I ask a question? Why does it take so long at the task force?
Well, there's an initial hearing, potentially even a pre-hearing, and then usually they refer it out to the Compliance and Amendments Committee, which happens 2 or 3 weeks later. They have another hearing to review the status of it. Then subsequently, if they continue to refuse to produce the records, then it's referred back to the full task force. The full task force has another hearing about it, and potentially then or a month following for there. So it's the matter of the hearings happen about every 2 weeks if they're going between the full task force and the committee.
Well, that sounds like a much longer process than is it even envisioned here. Maybe it could be expedited through a rethinking of the process that you go through at the task force.
I'm not on task force, but I think that's a good idea. I think there's many people in the public that are very frustrated by the amount of time it takes to get a full hearing. But let's point out to you that on the EDU official misconduct matter, that stretched out quite long in your scenario, and it never was even completed. So there's still concern about how long it would take when it came here to ethics.
Yes, Commissioner Mark Solomon. Again, the task force is where the due process takes place. You want to be sure you bend over backwards to ensure that everyone has the space to be heard in a public forum. When it comes to this body, all you're doing is talking about aggravating and mitigating circumstances that might say, do we actually fire this person with official misconduct, or do we give them some kind of a suspension or maybe a fine? That's all this body gets to do, is to figure out how do we enforce it to make things really happen. The due process is over. All you want to hear is, you know, well, my dog ate it, or, well, I threw it away, or what? That's going to be what happens here. And then you decide based on what they say. So I would say sentence three from because down to ordinance, just X that out, because all you've got to talk about is guilty, what's the punishment, and what bears on making that decision.
Are there any other comments?
Well, let me explain the show cause concept, since it was my idea. I assumed there had to be a hearing of some sort. You just couldn't drag in the official in leg irons and say, you've got 24 hours to comply or you're going to go somewhere you don't want to be. I assumed there had to be some sort of an official hearing, give them a chance to show cause why that order should not be enforced. And a show cause hearing cannot relitigate or review all of the evidence that was before the task force and all the hearings that took place and all the people like us who showed up for those hearings and offered our views and talked about the evidence that was presented. So, you know, I viewed it as basically a due process issue, but it doesn't have to be an extended issue. The point is, this has got to be as quick as you can make it. That's what a court does when it's presented with it. And in the past, when a referral ends up with ethics, and I wrote it in my memo, one of them went 14 months before being dismissed, and of course the dismissal was totally opaque, as were all the other 13. So, and the least of which was 7 months. So you just can't have this situation. That order gets referred in, it's scheduled for your next meeting, it's a show cause hearing. If the official doesn't comply within 10 days, 15 days, then the next hearing is what happens to you. And I view that as pretty fast. The fact is that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force goes out of its way to accommodate the respondent. It needn't do that. If the respondent says, well, we can't make it today, they'll ask the complainant, can we wait 2 weeks? They'll say, okay. But once it's gone through that process, that's the end of the story. So, you know, my view is, and again, it's really my view, it's a determined case. And the only issue is there something new and different that wasn't shown that may allow the particular respondent to find a way to justify what happened? But if it doesn't happen at that show cause hearing, then the next action is your order, and we know what should happen if that order is entered. Thank you.
Can I ask Mr. Grossman a question? Mr. Grossman? Thank you. I just have a question. Thank you, sir. If we hold a show cause hearing and the burden of proof is on the respondent. Okay, so let's just say.
It's not a burden of proof, because a burden of proof can be overcome with evidence.
So if we have a show cause hearing, what would that look like? And I'm referring to your memo, page 2, we cannot include any provisions that would authorize us to review or reject or deny or refuse to accept any Sunshine Ordinance Task Force finding or conclusion. What is happening at a show cause hearing if we can't do that and there is no burden of proof on the person before us?
Well, I was a business lawyer. and I'm not a litigator, but my understanding is that a show cause hearing has a much, much higher standard than a burden of proof hearing, and that in a show cause hearing, you're not allowed to revisit what happened before. What you are allowed to do is present some sort of a theory or evidence or even possibly a legal argument that wasn't made before. My dog ate it argument that was not presented to the task force. So I don't have that record anymore. It's disappeared. I just found out my dog ate it.
And if that's presented, does not then the commission have the responsibility to respond by reviewing or rejecting what has been said? Are you referring only to the determination that was not included in the new evidence that's presented to us? So we can't review that, but we can hear my dog ate it, and we can review that and then make a decision that it's valid or not.
That would be my take on it. But okay. I think there's a due process aspect to it, because mm-hmm. if there's no other excuse, then the next step is the order's entered. And if that order isn't your order,
right.
and if that isn't complied with, then that triggers an official misconduct finding, not under the Sunshine Ordinance, not under 6734, but under the city charter, whatever your section, 15105C right. or something. I forgot what it is.
Thank you.
Richard Nee. I don't think I spelled my name before. It's K-N-E-E, and you probably won't be surprised if I say I resent the term knee-jerk reaction. Anyway, I wanted
talking to Ben Hur, so.
Yeah, I wanted to note that you bear no resemblance at all to Charlton Heston, which is in your favor, by the way. I want to respond to the query from Mr. Ward. There are times when the length of time it takes for something to wend its way through the task force process is indeed frustrating to the task force, to complainants, and sometimes even to respondents. We're an all-volunteer body. We meet once
as
a month.
As our way.
I'm sorry?
As our way.
We meet once a month, and then our committees meet once a month, usually, you know, alternate every 2 weeks. But there are some cases where our process has actually worked quite well. For instance, a number of complaints brought never even reach the task force because our administrator brings the two sides together, they resolve it, it's done. There are times when the task force will meet, issue an order of determination, 2 weeks later the Compliance and Amendments Committee meets, and the complainant and the respondent have got together. The complainant says, the documents I wanted, I've gotten. So again, it can be expeditious. But what we want to do is give the respondent ample opportunity to comply with the order of determination, and then if he doesn't, it's up to the full task force to make the referral. So the Compliance and Amendments Committee sends it back to the full task force, and the full task force votes on whether to refer it to ethics or Board of Supervisors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I hope that answers your question.
Any other public comment?
Peter Warfield, Library Users Association. Chair Nee from Sunshine certainly talks about the response to the commissioner, and yes, one of the other speakers spoke about the task force bending over backwards. So yes, there are delays because the respondent isn't able to attend, and so the complainant comes in, they're on vacation, they whatever it is, now it's another month, since the full body only meets every month. I think Mr. Nee misspoke, it's not 2 weeks. When that body is going to postpone until next month's meeting, it's a whole month. So there's a whole range of back and forth, as Mr. Crossman described, with respect to the process of the task force. On item C, what I wanted to comment on is that I understand, and I think perhaps the commissioner is making the point, that this is an improvement over what might have been done in the past, which is to have staff handle it completely without any public process before the commission or before the public. But it's not what the folks have been talking about, and I have been talking about as well in support of Mr. Grossman's point. It may, in your view, be an improvement. Certainly in terms of the public nature of the process, it may be an improvement over a closed-door staff process. But it's not the concept, which I think we've been promulgating, which is that you guys just do enforcement when there's already been a procedure in place. In that connection, I'm concerned that we might have overlooked something under item A, which does not talk about any public process for the commission handling complaints that are brought to it, whether in particular as original complaints. The whole process of handling complaints as an internal matter for the staff, I think, is extremely problematic given the nature of Sunshine and given particularly the nature of how the Sunshine Ordinance works. I personally had an experience a number of years ago in which the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force sent to the Ethics Commission a rather egregious violation. It included the department not showing up for meetings, saying they didn't have to. And I don't even remember how long it was, because only by chance, when I attended a Sunshine Ordinance Task Force meeting a year and a half, 2 years later, did I by chance learn that this body had sent the task force a letter. I had never been contacted. I had never been asked. I'd never been told of any process. I had never heard absolutely anything at all. I'd like to say I'd heard nothing from know-how. And then to read from the Ethics Commission that there was a finding of no violation was absolutely shocking and dismaying to me. So I would like you to reconsider, if it is necessary to do so under item A, that you have public process for any of your complaints about Sunshine violations, and that you not have this kind of closed, behind closed doors process that nobody understands, nobody knows how it works, nobody asked me anything, and then a conclusion is reached without apparently any process from this commission at all. Thank you.
I think that just on your last point, that C, it, where we are now, is the right place, and we're talking about enforcement hearings, which are public commission activities. We don't usually respond to all of them, but I on that particular point, it's easy to say that the process that we describe here in item C would, in fact, be a public enforcement process. So that problem would be outdated.
Yes, thank you. I'm talking about the what's handled with A, in particular with original complaints, where there hasn't been a referral.
Either way.
I guess what I'm saying is I didn't see an A.
No, you're right. If you came here only, you're right, it would be investigated. That is correct.
And
okay.
I think just as it's important for C, it should be also important for A as well, for original complaints. Thank you.
Ms. Johnson.
Hi. I just wanted to address the third sentence of 3C as well. It seems that it is a little bit inappropriate to allow new evidence to come in before the Ethics Commission. Even in a litigation court of appeal, they only stick to evidence that has been brought in the original case. They don't bring in new evidence, and I think it would unfairly it would be unfair to the original complainant, who would have no knowledge that this new evidence was going to come in. So I'd like to suggest that if you are going to have something similar to a burden of proof, that it would be limited to evidence that they brought in at the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, and maybe show how the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force may have gotten that wrong or made an error, because I don't understand why they wouldn't be bringing up all of their evidence anyway during the original hearings. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments or questions, discussion at this point?
I guess I have a couple comments on this. With respect to the enforcement, I mean, could we have a mechanism whereby you would essentially just be enforcing like you would a settlement, like a court would enforce a settlement agreement, where the parties have, you know, or there is an agreement, they give the court or the jurisdiction to enforce that agreement, and what the court does is looks at the agreement and says whether or not it should be, you know, just says what the agreement says that should be done. that would be, in my mind, a more summary proceeding than one in which you are having the evidence represented to you. And I think that the way to reconcile 67.3 and 67.35D is that maybe indeed that's the idea. Maybe indeed the idea is that in an instance where some other body has made a determination on a violation, that you can go directly to the Ethics Commission for enforcement. For example, perhaps the task force makes a determination of violation but doesn't refer it to the Ethics Commission. In that instance, perhaps a person could use 67.35D to go directly to the commission and seek enforcement. So in that sense, I think that the proceeding should be more narrow and more summary. However, I'm also quite concerned that this proceeding would be too summary for instances in which there are complaints alleging willful misconduct by department heads or elected officials, because I think in that case the commission has to have a full hearing. I mean, if to be handled by the Ethics Commission suggests to me that we need to determine in the first instance, regardless of whether there's a referral, to our satisfaction that there has been a violation. So.
Commissioners, we have a motion made and seconded, made by Commissioner Harriman, seconded by Commissioner Ward, that we adopt item C.
Three C.
Decision point three, as set forth in item 3C, related to the handling of referrals. Commissioners had their say. We will vote. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Thank you. Did someone have a question? The vote was 3-2, and on that basis, we will ask the staff to begin the process of developing regulations. We fully expect, as I said at the outset, that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force will have the opportunity to listen, to understand the discussion and the back and forth, and to comment to us while we are still in the process of developing those regulations. And as I assured Commissioner Hansen, we've done this in a broad conceptual level. Many of the comments that we've heard have some specific suggestions, for example, with respect to penalties that are will certainly be helpful to us as we think about how to achieve the objective of satisfying and assuring that the public has the rights protected and provided by the Brown Act, the Public Records Act, and that the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force and the Commission are here to pursue. So this has been a complicated conversation, and we will certainly be working with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force and among ourselves and with the staff to develop the specific proposals that will come back to us again.
If I might, I would just like to appreciate the work of Commissioner Harriman and Mr. Grossman and the staff, because I know this is a it is a complicated issue, and it's going to take a lot more work, and I appreciate that we're moving slowly in the direction that you're taking us. So thank you.
And I do appreciate the commitment of everyone here to making sure that the public has the rights that are provided for by the City and County of San Francisco. And we will struggle on. Thank you.
And if I could, I'm sorry, I left out members of the public. I also wanted to thank those who are here, because I really appreciate you taking the time, and I think it was very instructive. So thank you all.
And that's who I meant by everybody.
Thank you.
When Commissioner Harriman actually suggests a restroom break, you know it's time. So we will take a let's try and come back before 10 of so that we can keep moving. Thank you. What a night not to have snacks. lo and behold, on item four. Ready to roll. Regarding post-employment restrictions, this was one that was before us before, and we asked the staff to return to the scene and capture some concerns on the theory that group drafting late at night was perhaps not the best way to find a smooth solution. Do people have any questions? Do we need this introduced for us by staff?
I do have one question. Why is the word former being stricken?
The ordinance was amended back in 2009, and what this part of the ordinance governing post-employment, the one-year post-employment ban, affects not only former employees of the city, but also employees who transfer from one department to another. So those individuals would not be able to contact their departments from which they transferred on behalf of other folks.
And by eliminating the word former?
Yeah, this really just conforms to the language in the ordinance itself.
So former employees?
So it would be current city employee, but no longer in the same job.
So that's all?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not having left city government.
No, it includes having left city government employees. What this does is just defines what department, board, commission, office, or other unit of government for which the officer or employee served. So that could include employees who have left the city or employees who have moved on.
Employees.
Yes. Right. But the law, the ordinance now encompasses broader, more than just former employees. It encompasses employees who left one department to go work to another.
So if I was a former employee,
yes,
and this was being applied to me, and I pointed to the language and said, this doesn't apply to me because I'm a former employee, I'm not an employee.
If you look at page one. And actually, this is a regulation that clarifies the law. The law actually is set out on page one. If you look at page one, you'll see the former.
Right.
Does that answer your question? The intent is to continue to say a person for which an officer or employee served, including those who served somewhere and are now serving in another agency, as well as those who served and have departed either employment or city employment.
Exactly.
So,
well, I'll make a motion that we adopt the proposed amendment to regulation 3.234-5A1.
Any discussion? I don't see any public to comment.
All right. One small typo.
Yes.
On the regulation language, let's see. It's B2, following factors shall be used to determine the unit of government for which an officer or employee directly served.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Thank you. Excellent. That's a three-pointer.
Like
that. call the question. All in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay. We have this interesting item on our agenda. Given the lateness of the hour and also that we wore out the public, my suggestion is that we set, if you all are willing, a time frame for this so that we can introduce some ideas tonight, but recognize that it's a conversation that we want to continue with. I'm going to suggest no more than 10 minutes total. I think it's enough to identify the kinds of things that we think might fall within it, get some questions about staff capacity and how some things are done now, like interested parties, so that we can get a summary and then go back and think about it some more and think about what we want to bring forward here or conduct in other places. This is, just briefly, as it says, education and communication with the public have always been high priorities. I think in the process has always been the top priority for the commission. And yet thinking about what that means at any given moment is an appropriate thing for the commissioners to think about. So we, on some occasions, we look at our education program, and here we're trying to say, are we reaching the people who want to know or might want to know about what we're doing using the tools that we have? Are we as inclusive as we'd like to be? Are we, one question that Commissioner Hansen and I have both had is whether there are people other than those who are actively interested and involved in the sense of candidates, their treasurers, their committee members, potential candidates in the case of campaign finance, and other people directly working with us who might, in a good government sort of way or in some other fashion, care about what we are doing either educationally or provide additional perspectives when we have choices to be made to assist the commission in those kinds of understandings. So I, seeing no objection, we will spend about 8 or 9 minutes now identifying suggestions, concerns, kind of creating an outline of things that we might take a look at, or asking the staff about how things are handled that might help us make that kind of judgment. So any thoughts, questions, suggestions? Commissioner Hansen?
Thank you, and I appreciate, Commissioner Studley, your willingness to include me in this discussion and to hold this discussion, both to include my comments, since this has been a longstanding concern of mine, and to also hold it until there are members of the public. A large part of my interest in this issue is that I would like to think that there are people in the public who are interested in our work. And so what I'd like to do is try to figure out some ways that we could have the kind of dialogue that we had tonight, we don't often get, and that we figure out ways, certainly taking into consideration staff time, so that we can expand the group of people who are interested in our work. So one of the areas I'm interested in looking at is whether we can expand the number of interested persons meetings and the in some ways more important than the number of them, the focus of those meetings, so that if we were able to create an expanded outreach program so that people in the public who are not members of the regulated community, because I think we do a very good job of reaching out to the regulated community. I don't think we do as good a job of reaching out to members in the non-regulated community who often have differences of opinion with the regulated community. So are there ways that we could expand our outreach, have more people on our interested persons list, and then specifically reach out to individuals, clubs, organizations that are engaged in the political process and that would be interested in a particular topic, not necessarily wanting to come to Ethics Commission meetings, but would be, for example, interested in this topic. Is there a way that, short of just putting it out on our agenda and hoping people go to the website, read the agenda, decide that it's important to them to come to these meetings. I think we could get more dialogue going with the public if we put out a message that we're now about to take on X topic, and we intentionally and carefully think about the universe of folks who would be interested in that topic and consider having a meeting before we take up the issue. Yes.
Can I say something before yes. you? I apologize for not saying this at the outset. We obviously all understand that resources are tight, and I know Commissioner Hansen certainly appreciates that as well. So what I'm thinking we will have is a conversation that raises some questions, ideas, and lets us imagine a little bit, fully understanding that any action we would take or any steps that we would take would have to be consistent with our other responsibilities and the capacity we have to handle them, but that there may be some ideas that can be done with modest additional resources. In a minute, I'll ask Jack to speak to the interested parties list, just the scope of who we tell about what we're doing. There may be resources we can enlist who would be interested in something that we might want to do that would not have to take staff time if there were other ways of accomplishing it, ranging from the fabled graduate students or volunteers to commissioners ourselves if there were an appropriate kind of activity. So I don't want anybody to worry that we have forgotten how very much we have on our plate, especially in a season with an electoral cycle, and how much we already ask of our staff. But that doesn't mean that we can't be thinking about what we'd like to do in the future or what we might be able to do efficiently or with new resources. So with that reassurance, I thank you for yielding back the floor from the room. So go ahead.
A response from staff?
No, I think I think why don't you continue and describe some of your thoughts, and then we can sort of pick up.
And again, I don't want to take much time because we can certainly wait on this, but if it's helpful to have a brief discussion and then flesh some of this out, I would suggest along the lines of what I just said, we do some expanded outreach to get folks who might be interested in this topic to come to a meeting to talk about it more. For whatever reason, we've had a very hard time bringing people to Ethics Commission meetings. And sometimes when there's a particular issue, a handful of people will come. There have been many times, however, when I have felt that there was a topic that should be of interest and there were not any or many members of the public there. So I think the way we do our outreach, the targeted, the specific, the more specific it is, the more likely we might be able to have folks provide input. I thought this was very helpful tonight. So that's what I'm looking for, is just more dialogue with the public. I guess the second area that I would suggest that we look at is how we conduct ourselves and relate to the public in these meetings. So we have traditionally, it's my belief that we've traditionally not been as transparent with our process as I think we could be. We're moving in the direction of getting a clock so people can see, for example, very simple things like how much time do they have. Just out of respect for the public, I think and it's my experience in other public bodies that there's a clock that people can see and they get a 30-second warning so that we don't kind of end up in this position of cutting people off. And I've just had far too many comments that we are not seen as a friendly body, that we've been rude to people in the public, that we don't listen to people, that we don't respond. Not only do we not respond in these meetings, but then we don't get back to people when we say, or sometimes don't say, but we make it clear that we can't respond, but then we don't do anything about it after the meeting. And as I have said before, I do believe that we should look at the way that other commissions deal with the public. I believe that there's clear language that we can, in fact, respond in a minimal way to the public so that they feel heard, that we can ask questions. It's not a dialogue about what's not on the agenda, but it is a not only a polite response, it's also an instructive short of dialogue that can then help us decide if this is the kind of an issue that we want to take on at some future point. But without any further information, we just take these comments and they go into the void. So those are kind of the two main areas I guess I would suggest that we look at.
Anybody else want to offer up additional thoughts or questions? Just briefly, in opposite order, I agree that there are some process improvements at a meeting that, as I mentioned, that you missed. I asked the staff to just do something on the clock and timing issue. During tonight's meeting, I was thinking that in part because we knew we had people were on point, not necessarily as to 1, 2, and 3, but they were on the same memo the whole time. What we had was something like a working session where we did ask questions and we did not keep the, first we talk, then they talk, then we finish. And I'd be interested, people might want to comment to Jack after this, either now or, if you want to reflect on it, whether that seemed appropriate, helpful. We were grappling with the substance with them, treating it, while we are the ones who make the decision at the end of that conversation, we asked questions and we tried to plumb the understanding or test out some hard discussions. Is that something that's appropriate? Is that something that we might sometimes want to designate that it's different from the, say the initial segment of the meeting where people pop up and can say anything appearing or not appearing on the agenda? Where I am sympathetic, even with trying to be responsive and let people know that we're heard, that once we start distinguishing between, gee, that was an interesting point, let's think about it, and that sounded sort of bizarre and crackpot, and I don't know what I would say apart from we appreciate your thoughts. But that then, I understand why some previous chairs have wanted to say it is safer and wiser to just let it come at us and be polite and listen, but what can we do in the meetings? So that's something maybe you and I can talk about, what else we can do that doesn't get into those dangers. Jack, maybe you want to, on the other, to just tell us how the interested persons lists are built and whether they're, what some of the easy stage things kind of might be and what else we could do. And then.
Well, the interested persons list is self-generated. We start off, we have a list, and at one point back, going back several years when it was still mailed, more than half of it was coming back. So we did a survey to people saying, if you don't tell us, we're not going to keep sending this to you. And then as we moved into more online systems, it's the same thing. The majority of people that get it now are online. But still, once a year, we send a notice, do you want to keep receiving this? And if they don't affirmatively respond, we take them off the list. The online addresses are not a burden in terms of postage or staff time for mailing, so we could stop doing that and leave people on. By the same token, we could call some lists of clubs and stuff like that. They'll be good at least temporarily. Officers don't stay the same and that sort of thing. Not all the clubs have a separate email for the club. So if there's, if you want to suggest any lists, we have the staff time to input a bunch of addresses, whether it's dozens or even a couple of hundred. We could expand the list like that, provided it's primarily online. But in terms of ongoing outreach, we're always encouraging people to sign up when they call with questions about things. And obviously people in the regulated community would be included in that because this stuff has an impact on their campaigns, et cetera. But that's how that list is run. It's, you know, after every meeting, we send out a meeting summary to the list and to the media and to all the office holders and so on. But we do have two separate lists. One of them is interested person, one's the media. But both lists get all the same things.
I wonder if, on the question of reaching out beyond the regulated community, if that's something that you and I could talk about and just think about whether there are some pilots or some things that we'd like to test. Because I think you and I think on instinct that there exist such people, and there are others, some of them in the room, who think that that just is a null set, that there is not a group that might. And we might want to see if there are simple forays that would allow us to add people to that list or think about how we would know where we might get that value. So there are times when I also would be intrigued to have somebody say, I may not remember the exact examples, but that violation to me seems serious. I'm a member of the public here in San Francisco, and I'm not right in the middle of all this. That just seems too easy or too hard. Or we've had some related to campaign finance. What do people want to know? How might people use this? Maybe sometimes it's reporters who are our interested public. Would that get you campaign finance reports in a useful way? For others, it might be, you know, the League of Women Voters or graduate students in political science who would, you know, who might add to the universe of people who are thinking about what we do. But if, you and I may have a little more what a friend of mine calls juice for this, such that we could bring either things back to the staff that are not policy decisions, just places that might be invited or told that they can be part of it. And there may be other things that we bring back for discussion or to jog other people's reactions to what we offer. Would that make sense?
I would be happy to do that. I have to say that I feel like I have not gotten much of a response to this in the past. And, for example, I've asked at least a couple of times if we could just put all of the clubs on the list. Now, presuming they have email addresses.
Political clubs, sorry.
These are folks who are engaged more often than not in elections. Hopefully there's an email address. It seems like we have the staff to be able to put them on the list. So whether or not we know that, I happen to know that some of them are interested, and hopefully they've signed up if they're that interested as opposed to just telling me. But it doesn't seem like it would take a whole lot of energy to put the political clubs on the list. What is to lose by doing that? And yet for some reason, when I've asked that happen, it hasn't. In addition, I have often said, members of the public have said to me something, and I'll bring it to this body. Often it doesn't go anywhere. And certainly not everything I should say should go anywhere. But if there's no follow-up, if there's no response, if there's no even acknowledgement, then when I get back to the person or persons who raised it and say, it's not happening, that does not generate respect for this body, which is the other piece that I'm working on. I want people to believe that when they raise an issue, even if they are not able to come themselves to this meeting, if they raise it with one of us, that it'll get heard at some level. And I think in some ways it's going to take some time to get people interested in our work, and we have to go the extra mile to show that we're responsive, and then eventually members of the public will start to say that we're responsive and we're listening and we'll begin to respect our work. And I'm not speaking globally, because there are many people who respect our work. I often hear, unfortunately, from people who don't. And so I'm trying to reach out to those people and give them good reason to respect our work and to believe that we're taking our obligation seriously.
Well, I'm sure we all volunteer or serve here with the same goal of being respected and doing quality work. You and I have gone over the time that I sit, so why don't we follow up on those, particularly those two issues, outreach and I'll talk to you about responsiveness as well. Okay, and if anybody wants to share a suggestion with either of us, but not both of us at the same time, or share it through Jack, that would be helpful. Okay, thank you. Let's move to the minutes. The staff has identified some corrections, and it might be efficient if we just let you tell us what they are that you've already seen, and then if commissioners have any other corrections, clarifications, or comments, we can deal with those. Thank you.
Thanks. On the top of page 2, the end of the second sentence is a typo, requested. Mr. Grossman's comment.
Yeah, if it's that sort of level, it's the sub, you said there were some that were.
No, there are no. They're not. There aren't any. I'm sorry, I ran over again with Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Are we comfortable if they are subject, verb, spelling, purely technical? Are there any other comments or commission?
This is just a question about a statement in the minutes, and that is on page 2. The third full paragraph, starting Mark Solomon, the last sentence of that paragraph, he stated that he would like to see the documents be requested within 48 hours. He'd like to see the documents he requested within 48 hours. Did we give him what he requested or not?
There were documents responsive to his request that he was allowed to view. And there were other documents that we said were not available for public access.
So we responded
yeah.
in what we thought was appropriate to him. Okay, thank you.
All right, I'll move that we adopt the minutes of last month's meeting with the staff to make whatever typographical corrections they need to.
Just a minute, I'm reading one paragraph. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you very much. The next item is the executive director's report.
Just one thing I want to add to this. Under the budget, obviously you can see what we have is what I consider pretty terrific news, a $38,000 cut over last year's figure, which we will be able to shoulder. Just as an FYI, the controller, in looking at possible shaky ground that the whole city is sitting on, has slapped a reserve.
That's not funny in San Francisco.
I withdraw the comment. Has taken a reserve from all departments in next year's budget just in case the financial position gets gloomy. Ours is $100,000. Ultimately, I'm going to probably have to shelter our temp funds towards the end of the year just to make sure we can make that up. The downside to that would be normally during an election year that's as busy as this one, we would have temporary staff to help out during the election season. We may not have that luxury, although we're trying to find some students to sort of fill in the gaps there. The budget, our first budget hearing is the day after tomorrow. The budget analyst at the Board of Supervisors has not made any challenges to our budget. It's the first time since I've been here that that hasn't happened. So I'm hoping for some sailing if we get through Wednesday's hearing without any issues or feedback or other things, then we probably will be done and won't have to go back the following week. I'm anticipating there'll be some questions about the balance in the election campaign fund There's a more than sufficient number for this year, but we may be facing potential shortfalls next year when we have a mayoral race. Obviously, the mayor has a commitment to restore $6.2 million that's been borrowed from that fund. It does not look like they're going to be doing any of that this year.
Questions? I know that that budget work is complicated, and that is good news, and thank you for the advocacy and education and outreach that has made that possible. Any questions or comments, commissioners?
I have one question.
Yeah.
With regard to revenue projections, as you know, I was concerned about the removal of the special condition on the fines officer, and I don't see this as a personnel matter. I understand there may be components of it that are a personnel matter, and I'm not interested in talking about that, but I see it as a policy decision to remove that special condition, which then puts us in what I'm quite concerned about is having someone in a very critical position who has zero experience. Mr. Luby had years of experience and a
Commissioner Hansen, perhaps I do think that there is a personnel as well as a management matter here. I'm perfectly comfortable having you ask what consequences we may see in staffing as a result of a whole set of personnel shifts or in the fines area, but when one is saying an individual's name, I think that tells me that we're in a personnel issue. So, I share your interest in knowing how this will affect our, how all of these personnel matters will affect our ability to be effective. And I have no problem with you asking about that.
I appreciate that. With due respect, I'm not trying to talk about the personnel issue. What I'm talking about is a decision was made without our concurrence. We're now going to have a fines officer who knows nothing about fines, and I'd like to know.
That sentence is pure personnel. Those last two sentences are nothing but personnel issues.
It's also.
Let me frame my question. I'd like to know what, if any, projections we're making about loss of revenue due to the loss of our current fines officer who has knowledge and experience, and we will now, that person is replaced by someone who has no experience.
That question is?
The first part of that question is proper.
And I'm not anticipating any loss of revenue at all. We'll get the new person trained. We're going to be moving some of the capabilities that prior to now have required human research, and we're going to use our NetFile capabilities to be able to look at and analyze files electronically, which should make the job easier and less time consuming. There may be a lag from now while this person gets ramped up to where they need to be, where some letters will go out weeks from now that normally would have gone out in those ensuing weeks. But other than that, I don't anticipate a drop off in the actual number of fines. It may be that there's a longer gap right now from when we would have gotten them to when we will get them, but I don't think it's terribly significant.
So in terms of knowledge that one, I believe, has to have of local codes and statutes and FPPC rulings, you don't feel like
it's
the loss of that?
It's true of every single staff member we have, and they come and they go, and when we replace them, everybody's got the same learning curve. I don't like the bumping system and the archaic rules that allow it, but it's something we have to live with. And, I'm not going to address the circumstances that I do consider personnel actions and where they came from or why they were justified. But it's my job to make sure this commission runs the best that they can with what we have, and we'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. The next item is items for future meetings. Do commissioners have any proposals for items for future agendas?
I have one request, and that is, I know we've looked at this before. I don't know how in-depth we were able to do so, but I'll raise it again and tell me if it's a dead issue, and that is the issue of fundraising for the County Central Committee races. This, if it hasn't already come to our attention or to the staff's attention, it was quite apparent in this last election that tremendous amounts of money were being raised by people running for Democratic Central Committee, is the one I'm familiar with, and the people who were running were in some cases are in some cases also running for supervisor. So it's I think we're about to see some press on it, and I've certainly noticed it myself and heard from folks who feel that there's a loophole in the law that allows people to raise tremendous amounts of funds for their DCC race that then builds their visibility toward their supervisorial race. So we have cases where lobbyists and developers have put quite a lot of money into some of the candidates. One would think they wouldn't be particularly interested in Democratic Central Committee. Maybe it's because the Democratic Central Committee is flexing its muscle, but it seems to me that there's an interest in potentially influencing the outcome of the supervisorial race. So I'd like us to look at that, if we could.
Okay. And it's an existing practice, but, you know, we've defined electioneering communications as 90 days out. You know, you would have to start looking at that window, too. There's other side, there are business people who run for office who suddenly advertise widely around the city. For their business, it doesn't mention their campaign, but it gets their photo out there with a big smile on their face.
So I think just a recap for us about what our authority is, what rules do apply to this kind of behavior, so we can see if we want to think about it. There's no public, therefore no comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
I think that's qualifying. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the staff. Appreciate it. Have a lovely evening. And I should have said